This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As if we needed proof of Kevin Kline's versatility, he's now starring in the hit comic film In and Out, the critically acclaimed dramatic film The Ice Storm, and a new Lincoln Center production of Chekhov's Ivanov. In the film In and Out, Kevin Kline plays a small-town high school teacher who's about to be married when he's outed by a former student. The problem is the teacher hasn't even admitted to himself that he's gay. The film The Ice Storm takes place in 1973 and is about the impact of the counterculture and the sexual revolution once it's filtered down to suburban Connecticut. Married couples are restless and are dealing with it by having spouse-swapping parties. Their kids don't know what their limits are and are going off the deep end. Kevin Kline plays Ben Hood, who's cheating on his wife with his neighbor and is unsure what kind of father to be to his children. Here he is in the car with his 16-year-old son, played by Tobey Maguire.
You know, Paul, I was thinking this may be as good a time as any to have a little talk about, whole gamut, facts of life. As I tell you, there's things happening that you're probably old enough to digest.
Things.
Well, things that happen between a... on the self-abuse front, and this is important. I don't think it's advisable to do it in the shower. It wastes water and electricity, and because we all expect you to be doing it there in any case. And not on under the linen. Well, anyway, if you're worried about anything at all, just... feel free to ask, and we'll look it up.
Dad, you know I'm 16.
Huh. All the more reason to be having this little heart-to-heart.
Although The Ice Storm is a period film, the early 70s is a period Kevin Kline lived through, so he had personal experiences to draw on, not just research.
I was alive there, and I remember, and my connection to the film was more actually as... the younger generation in the movie, the kind of disillusionment, post-Vietnam, in the midst of Watergate, I mean, everything, the father figure of, the president being now a criminal in our minds, and just this sort of national familial disintegration.
Even those of us who aren't actors know that when you put on certain clothes, it makes you feel a certain way, different from yourself. What was it like for you to wear some of the clothes, some of the 70s clothes you wear in this period, like in the first scene that you're in? As I recall you wearing, I think it's like a brown and white striped shirt with a vest and slightly flared bell bottoms. It's the very kind of tailored, controlled, straight middle class version of freaky hippie styles from the period.
Yeah. It was, it's about as uncomfortable a costume as I've ever had to wear. And I suppose part of the trick and part of the brilliance of Carol Odit's designs is that to make them not look like costumes, but to make them look like actual clothes. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all marveled, I think, at all of our costume fittings at these clothes. We just said, what were we thinking back then? What were we thinking? How could we wear these hideous, uncomfortable clothes? And for me, I suppose it was like... a physical manifestation of canker sores, which are hard to show on screen, but just the discomfort and the kind of self-consciousness that those clothes created, especially for my character with his little ascots and his neckwear and his vest fetish and these and the way they were all sort of form-fitting, and it was very uncomfortable and made us, I think, feel very self-conscious in an appropriate way. It's one of those cases where the artifice can actually make for something more real. In other words, if the actors can translate this self-conscious, artificial, costume-like feeling that they're having in these clothes, feed their characters in any given situation. And these people are very self-conscious.
What would you have been wearing in the early 70s when the movie is set?
I wore that timeless actor garb of blue jeans and a sweatshirt and tried to look like an actor.
Right. You use your body so differently in The Ice Storm and in In and Out. I mean, one's a comedy and one's a drama. Would you talk a little bit about your body, your posture, your movements in each of those films?
about? I think it's something I've always done instinctively, whether it's from loving athletics in high school. It's something I just do unconsciously, so it's hard for me to comment on it. I mean, in terms of where it comes from, probably a love of music from early in my life, but I never was a dancer. In fact, I was very self-conscious about dancing and still am in public.
Well, that's interesting, though, because you really dance up a storm in one scene in In and Out, where you're listening to a tape called Exploring Your Masculinity, and it's basically telling you to be very straight-laced and controlled, and your body's just giving in more and more to the urge to dance until you're dancing all over the living room quite well, I might add.
Oh, thank you. Well, there the mask is the source. I get by being this character, and especially a character in a very private moment dancing around his living room, I can abandon, which is one of the great privileges that actors have, and therapies as well, which is you abandon all of the self-consciousness you would have in a regular social situation on a dance floor at a party or whatever, and just give in to that Terpsichorean muse and just pretend you're Baryshnikov or Fred Astaire or whoever. And I had a great time doing that. In and Out, I remember thinking that this man has been in his head for 40 years and has not been in his body. And it's almost, and the moment when Tom Selleck grabs me and kisses me, suddenly he like sort of jump starts a dormant, anything from my neck down suddenly sort of is jolted into life.
Let's talk about that kiss scene in which, Tom Selleck plants this long and surprising kiss on your lips. And because he's gay and he realizes that you are and that you don't realize it. And your character goes through several moods in this long kiss, starting from resistance to ending up looking kind of like the ingenue.
Yes, precisely.
And first, I'm wondering what the screenplay said there. What kind of advice the screenplay gave you about how to handle the kiss?
Oh, wow. As I recall, it says he grabs him and kisses him. I remember we always discussed the scene, and whether or not Paul had written it in the stage directions or not, I can't remember. But it seemed to be in the tradition of screen kisses where the hero grabs the heroine and plants a kiss on her, and she's like stunned and insulted and affronted and yet very excited. And so I think it was basically sort of homage to that that tradition with a little twist, just that it happened to be two guys this time. And we tried it a number of different ways because it was one of those things that, well, the way I like to work and the way Frank Oz likes to work, and Tom, too, and Joan Cusack, and most of the members of that company, in fact, which is to play with it, to experiment, to try it a few different ways, and then, you know, before you can decide in the editing room which is the best way to go. So we tried it just indignant and snapping right back, and then we found this one where the one that we ended up using actually was my favorite one, where I'm so stunned that I'm just sort of wandering around in a daze from it, not quite sure it really happened, and then indignant, you know, with the wrapping the leg, again, he doesn't even know that his body did that because he's not in his body. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that was, we found this physical expression, and that was the next day that I had this idea of wrapping my leg around him. We added that, and so what you saw is really a combination of a day, takes from the day before, and then the ending was shot as an afterthought. I remember driving home after the day we shot the scene and said, there's something missing. I had this impulse on, like, one of the last couple takes, and I thought, I really should have done that, and I told Frank the next morning. And she said, that's great, let's shoot it. And so that's how we got what we call the button. And it's the signal for the audience that it's, in fact, a comic kiss. There's not much you can do, in a kiss, because there's so much tradition to it, and you're watching this kiss, and it happens to be two guys. But when the leg wrapped around him, it always worked, at least in the screenings I saw, as the signal that, it's a comedy.
My guest is Kevin Kline. He's now starring in In and Out and The Ice Storm. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Kevin Kline is my guest, and he's starring now in the movies In and Out and The Ice Storm, and he's also starring in the Lincoln Center production of Chekhov's Ivanov. You grew up in St. Louis, and your father ran a record store there, and I think then a toy store. Do I have that right?
It was simultaneous. It was a record. It started as a record store. It became a record and toy store and ended up as a toy store. He phased out the records during the 60s when all those discount record chains came into being. He kind of, he was a, you know, small business, and all the small record stores kind of all went out of business. So he just then focused on toys.
So what kind of records did he sell?
Mostly classical, but jazz and rock and roll. Part of his mission in life, I'm still meeting people who used to frequent his store who said, you know, your father turned me on to classical music. I would go in there to buy a Bo Diddley or Muddy Waters album, and he would convince me, you know, to buy Mozart and Beethoven. So he was a great lover of classical music and opera especially, and used to sing opera from behind the counter at his store and sort of harangue my friends, my generation, who were there to buy rock and roll, that they should, you know, broaden their musical horizons. And apparently it got through to many people.
Was it embarrassing at the time, though?
Oh, yeah. But not that embarrassing, because I'd become convinced at a rather early age that classical music was pretty cool. And I had loved it for many years. I was playing in a rock and roll band while I was in high school, but I was also studying classical piano, so I could, I just could never convince my father that rock and roll had its place. He just thought it was noise. Although he liked the Beatles. When the Beatles came, he said, there's something, this is more sophisticated, and but generally he was anti-rock and roll.
So what were your showpieces on piano when you were studying?
I was a great lover, and still am, of Bach, and because I started very late, I didn't start until, around eighth grade. But one thing I always had was great speed. So I would love to play Bach preludes and fugues, and that was sort of what I would do to show off.
So how did you get into acting?
I took an acting class my freshman year in college, because at my high school, we did not have a drama club or anything like that, but the seniors put on a senior play on the lawn in front of the main house of the school. And I remember doing that and enjoying it tremendously and not being nervous, but in fact feeling quite comfortable on stage while my friends were mostly vomiting in the wings from nerves. And I'm feeling quite at home. And so I thought, you know, and I loved movies. I didn't go to the theater much. There wasn't that much, or if there was in St. Louis, I wasn't aware of it. But I loved going to the movies, and my sister, God bless her, used to take me to less mainstream movies, which I would also see, but she would take me to the art house movies and see, you know, Antonioni films and Truffaut and what have you.
So why do you think you're so comfortable on stage instead of vomiting in the wings like
I don't know. To like this day, I have no idea. No one in my family were in the performing arena.
Some of your early years as an actor overlap with the period of your new movie, The Ice Storm. And, you know, in The Ice Storm, the character you play is somebody who's very kind of far removed, you know, in a little suburban enclave. He's kind of far removed from the real, you know, kind of cultural revolution going on around him. But it's all very confusing to him, and he's doing some things that are, you know, like the whole sexual revolution has filtered down into, you know, wife-swapping parties and things like that. But anyways, you know, there was a lot of radicalism in theater in that period, you know, nudity, the breaking down of the fourth wall, interactions between the audience and the people on stage, improvised work. So tell me a little bit about how the radicalism of that period affected your early days as an actor.
Oh, it was very exciting because, in fact, I think the most exciting
theater experience I've ever had was playing Viet Rock when I was a senior.
Is this an anti-war musical?
Yes, this is Megan Terry's play that was done originally at, I think they did it at Cafe Chino off Broadway. And it was an anti-war play where there was audience interaction, where there was music. It was the kind of play that, at the end of it, people would burn their draft cards. And, you know, I've just never been a part of a theatrical enterprise that had that kind of reaction. I mean, at the end, we were all blown up in a Saigon bar, and we all walked out. I remember the stage director, like, the actors in sort of slow motion rise from the floor and walk out to the audience and touch the audience, and we are angels. And it was this, I mean, it seems so hokey now in retrospect, this audience participation kind of thing. I loathe it. If I see an actor come off stage
toward me,
I just look at him like, don't come near me, bub.
Yeah, me too.
I hate it. But at the time, it was extraordinary. This was around the time that Peter Brook was doing Marat Sade and the whole Theater of Cruelty stuff, and I was reading Antonin Artaud and thinking, oh, yes, this is what it's all about. And it was very exciting. It's, I think those were exciting days in the theater.
Well, it must have been interesting for you coming from what I imagine was a fairly disciplined upbringing. You know, maybe you didn't practice piano 6 hours a day, but you had to be pretty disciplined to be a serious classical pianist. You went to a Catholic school taught by a Benedictine monk, so I imagine they didn't let you get away with a whole lot.
No, that's where I really learned discipline.
Yeah, okay, so you learned discipline on every front, really. And now you are in the theater, which requires a lot of discipline, but it's a period of kind of really unbuttoned stuff of...
Mm.
You know,
well, that's
letting
right.
loose
to me, it was
the
so,
psyche and everything.
Exactly. And to me, it was impossible. That was the irony that I was speaking of before. To me, I thought, how can I? I was the most uptight, especially physically uptight person. I go, where can I put my hands when I was acting? I remember not knowing for years. Well, look, I'd notice my outstretched hands and going, how did these get out here? And how can I get them? How can I retract them? I was very awkward physically. And emotionally, I was very... you know, buttoned down, Catholic, Benedictine, discipline, last thing in the world you're supposed to show is an emotion. And then I think, now I'm going to become an actor when that's the first thing you're supposed to show. So it was always ironic to me, but attractive, and I just couldn't resist it.
What was your first reaction when you started your movie career and you saw yourself on a large screen?
I remember the first dailies on Sophie's Choice, and I remember the scene... And I was sitting there, and I just said yes to, because Nestor Almendros, who was lighting it, and Alan Pakula was directing, and I said, that's him. And we all kind of said it, because we talked about how we wanted the character to look, and I just remember feeling that the way that they shot me, especially in this scene, I looked the way I wanted the character to look, and it all seemed right.
This is good. You were reacting to your character and not to yourself.
Yeah, I was never... I used to go to dailies all the time, and Meryl Streep said, oh, I go all the time. And it's, some actors can't. It makes them self-conscious. But I can look at it very objectively and just look at it as, well, is that right for the character? Is that wrong? And so I go to dailies now usually for the first week or so of a movie just to make sure that what I'm thinking is in fact coming across is... I mean, what I'm thinking is coming across is, in fact, coming across. And that's one of the benefits of movies, that you can get at, you can be your own third eye and look at dailies. But no, it didn't make me self-conscious. No.
You turned 50 recently, and I'm wondering if that seems significant to you as an actor, if you think that's going to have any effect one way or another on your career.
No, I think... I mean, it's just a number, the fact that we sort of tend to look at things in decades and these turning points. I was never very strong in math. To me, it's not the number so much as a feeling I have now, which is I don't feel old, but I do feel in a very positive way that my work is getting better and that my life is getting better. So I think perhaps... in no way due to any kind of effort on my part. I think I'm growing up and just appreciating life more, and that's making me do better work. I just feel very good. So I don't feel old or young. I just feel good.
Well, Kevin Kline, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Kevin Kline is starring in the films In and Out and The Ice Storm. He's starring in a Lincoln Center production of Chekhov's Ivanov. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.